How low can they go? We'll talk about what lower interest rates mean for you during this edition of On Your Money. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 5th. Certified financial planner Kevin McKinley is back with advice and information on your money. And we'll welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
How was your unofficial start to summer last weekend?
I start summer usually right after Valentine's Day, so I'm well into it, both with my activities and my swimwear.
Well, welcome back. It's good to have you back. And I didn't think that interest rates could go any lower, Kevin, but there they did. They went lower. What's going on?
Yes, they have, and it's not just at your local bank or credit union. It's a global phenomenon. The United States Treasury rates on the 10-year Treasury just dropped to a low we have not seen in most of our lifetimes, 1.6% yield right now. And even if you're willing to go out 30 years and buy a United States Treasury bond, I don't think you should. But if you are willing to go out that far, you will get a whopping 2.69%. In Germany, the 10-year note yields 1.2%. And in Switzerland, they had an interesting phenomenon that's been going on for a while now. The 3-month yield on a Switzerland Switzerland government bond currently has a negative yield of 0.62%. Now, negative 0.62. So actually, you are paying the government of Switzerland to hold your money for you for 3 months and get a little less back from it when the bill actually comes due. And in Japan, which has had low interest rates for what seems to be decades, they've actually taken the step of hiring a very popular pop girl band titled AKB48 to promote the sale of Japanese government bonds to their populace. No word on if we're going to draft Justin Bieber to do the same thing here in the United States, but I don't think we should rule any measures out at this point.
I wonder if we can pull up a selection from AKB48. Is that the name of the band?
Yeah, it is. I'm sure many public radio listeners are very familiar with it. They're actually a girl band, a bunch of young women. Several dozen women in this band, and they're wildly popular throughout Asia. But they're apparently going to get people to start buying even more bonds from the Japanese government.
So why is this happening? Not the band, but why are interest rates?
I don't understand why people listen to Justin Bieber either. It's really more so about a flight to quality. And the quality here is purely relative. Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, all these countries are having a great deal of difficulty getting their finances in order. And therefore, people are worried about these countries being able to pay interest and principal on those bonds. So they're moving out of those bonds. Those yields have soared on Greek, Spain, and Portugal and Italian debt. And it's because the money's moving into the so-called higher quality countries. The fear of default has been there for a while. What's happened in just the last few weeks is there's more of a fear of recession, not just in the United States or in Europe, but globally. And people start to get afraid of losing their money rapidly, so they're willing to accept virtually nothing in return. And they're really moving trillions of dollars into these bonds, hoping for a return of their principal instead of worrying about the return on their principal.
I thought I've heard that low interest rates are good for the economy because it might boost economic activity. Is that going to happen?
Typically, that's the thought. If people have can borrow money at a lower rate, they'll put it to work either by buying things if they're consumers or by businesses borrowing money to invest. But the problem is there's really no demand. Consumers are still deleveraging. They would just as soon have less debt rather than more debt. They're just afraid about their own situation, as many people are afraid of the global economic situation. So they're not interested in buying more things. Therefore, businesses don't want to borrow money just to reinvest in something in their business that may or may not pay off for them. And we're talking now, we may see QE3, quantitative easing version 3, which is one way that the Federal Reserve tries to boost up economic activity by dropping interest rates lower. The danger of that, though, is that rates are already very low. Therefore, putting trillions of dollars more into the system really doesn't have a lot of effect, but it generally means taking on trillions of dollars more printing of debt. One of the other dangers here is that, and this has happened in the last 6 months or so, when interest rates are artificially low like this, extremely low, people have a choice between either accepting little or no return on their safe money or trying to get a greater degree of return by taking on more risk. And the greater degree of return sometimes is far outweighed by the greater degree of risk. And so that can create great problems globally and even in your own investments.
Well, what about my own investment, our investments? What general advice do you have for savers and investors who are being affected by these really low interest rates?
Be very, very careful. Very careful at this time. And keep in mind that, let's say you find a yield, you know, you go to the bank and they say we've got 1.5% yield on a 5-year CD, which, by the way, is a very competitive rate right now. And you say, no, I'm going to go someplace else and I'm going to get a 2% advantage on that. So I'm going to find someplace that's paying me 3.5% on a different kind of investment. One 10% loss in the value of that investment can wipe out 5 years of that 2% per year gain that you've been accumulating. And in these times, a 10% loss can happen in the matter of hours, much less days or weeks or years. So if you are going to go out and trying to get more yield, you should accept that you can have a 10 to 20% loss at any given moment. That means that if you want to preserve your money and get some kind of yield, we still stick with CDs and savings bonds. Stable value funds and money market accounts might provide a little bit more yield or liquidity. If you're moving into bond funds, bond mutual funds have been very popular with people lately. But again, understand that those values of those bond funds can go up and down. And if interest rates rise or if the economy slows down or if people start to become worried about whether or not the bonds within the fund can be paid off as scheduled, you can lose a significant portion of that money in a very short period of time.
Kevin, Bill Martins, who's directing the show today, did find this ditty, Baby, Baby, Baby by AKB48.
I like it.
I like it.
I like it, and I feel like buying some Japanese government bond right now.
Well, I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question for Kevin, give us a call. We have open lines for you. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up a little bit later during On Your Money, we will have some computer cleanup tips, and Kevin will also have some advice for recent college graduates on how to handle expenses in the real world. And, of course, plenty of room for your personal finance question. Once again, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. We received an email from Mike who says, I just turned 25 and I have mostly worked lower wage jobs since high school. I have owned a home for 2 years and I'm in the process of remodeling it. I would like to attend a UW college or a technical college in the very near future. Would selling the home after remodeling it be a smart way to help pay for schooling? Thank you. Wow, Mike's got a lot on the ball if he's remodeling his own home at age 25, Kevin.
Especially since at the age of 46, I'm still hiring a guy to come in and change our light bulb. So
yes.
Good for you, Mike. I'm impressed. You're more of a man than and perhaps even all other genders than I will ever be. So good for you. At 25, I didn't even own a hammer, so I'm impressed by that. Mm-hmm. I think this isn't a bad idea, especially if it's, as it sounds like from the question, he has some skill and some knowledge in this. I get worried when people say, I'm going to do this. I've never actually operated a drill, and I watched a half hour show on cable, and now I think I know how to remodel my own home. But Mike sounds not like he knows what he's doing. Especially, this is a good idea if he has to move. I mean, he's got no choice but to get rid of the place, so he might as well remodel it, sell it, and use the proceeds. I wouldn't necessarily write a big check if he is able to sell it for a profit right away for school. I'd rather him keep that money set aside. But there is some question about doing this as a sole goal, because he probably has to invest not only his time but money in materials to remodel this place and make it better. And there is some question as to how much of that he will get back when he needs it to enroll in school. There's some time constraints on what he's trying to do here. So even if he can get all the way through the remodeling, there might be some better ways to monetize his work and effort.
What are some other better ways?
If he is going to move, he can just rent the thing out, and hopefully the income that he gets from renting his old place out can offset his living expenses in the new place. And a lot of people are concerned about doing that because they're worried they might miss out on need-based financial aid. But typically, rental income that offsets your own living expenses generally isn't going to hurt him too bad. And then he still keeps the house for later on, so if he does just decide to move back after school's done, it's there for him, and he can become the primary resident once again.
So what if he wants to continue living in the house, though?
Well, I would definitely go out and see if he can get a new mortgage on it, especially after it's finished. Now, if he's remodeled it successfully, he's going to get a higher valuation on the home, hopefully from the appraiser. And if he extends the mortgage out, he can get lower payments and really a lower interest rate than what he could get by borrowing for student loans, especially with the way financial aid is out there right now. If he can't either get the mortgage or doesn't want to undergo that, he should at least look at a home equity line of credit for any new equity he's built up in the home. Now, only use the money for emergency if he can't get any student loans or can't get enough student loans to cover his education expenses. But he needs to watch out for, you know, he's going to have to cover the loan payments on the mortgage, hopefully from the rent. But if he can't, then he's going to have to pay for that. Plus, if you're in a home that needs to be remodeled, you're probably not done once you're done with a particular project. It's an ongoing series of projects and expenses and work. So he might come up with something down the road that's going to cost $10,000 or $20,000 that he has to pay for, especially if he's renting the place out to somebody. And it's hard to, if you have a house that's in the middle of remodeling, it's very hard to borrow against it. It's very hard to rent it out, and it's very hard to sell. So if he's going to go through with this, I'd rather have him see it through to completion rather than kind of dabbling in it for a while and then being stuck with something that's worth even less than what he started out with.
Well, good luck, Mike. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees.
Wait.
I want money. That's what I want.
You're listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. This fine program will be preempted in its rebroadcast tonight for our recall election night special. Find out the results and analysis of our recall election starting when the polls close at 8 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow morning, by the way, all morning long from 6 until 9, we will be discussing the outcome of the election and getting your reaction as well as the reaction of many different guests. That's coming up here on the Ideas Network. Talking with Kevin McKinley about your money during this hour and welcoming your questions for him, we'll start with Eileen in Black River Falls. Hello, Eileen.
Hi. About 4 years ago, my husband passed away, and we have no children. And I'm not tied to anything. I did probably everything wrong, according to financial planning, when I got his life insurance. I paid off the house, which I hear I shouldn't have done, and you know, that sort of thing. What about reverse mortgages? I don't need a safe or anything like that. Is that a good idea?
Well, Eileen, first of all, I'm sorry for your loss. Second of all, don't beat yourself up about that, because in that situation, if the most if the biggest mistake you make under that cloud, if you will, is that you paid your mortgage off, I hope that's the worst thing that comes of all this from a financial standpoint, because I'm sure it felt better just to say, all right, at least I don't have to worry about the payments and the mortgage for this right now. So don't feel bad about that at all. If you don't mind me asking, Eileen, how old are you?
I'm 55.
You're 55. Okay. Are you working right now outside the home?
I am.
Okay, good. The reverse mortgages are generally only available to people who are 62 and over. At least one member of the couple has to be at least 62. So it's definitely something that I would consider at some point. I wouldn't use it as the first solution, but I wouldn't rule it out completely. They can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, but they can also be a very effective tool for people who have a paid for or almost paid for home, but don't have a lot of other assets and still want to stay in their home. Have you tried to get a new mortgage on the place again?
No.
Okay.
No, I do have a home equity line of credit, and I use that to do repairs and home improvement. One of the other things that I did is I did put a lot of improvement into the home.
Good. You plan on staying there for a while?
It's a four-bedroom home.
Oh, and okay.
It's on 2 acres, and once I retire, I probably won't be able to care for 2 acres of land.
Okay.
So, I did buy a motorhome, and maybe I'll just take off.
That's the kind of thing, Eileen, where people smarter than and richer than you and me keep that motorhome around just with the notion that, hey, at any minute I can just chuck all this and I can take off. So I like that as a little bit of an escape hatch for you. So here's a couple things I would do. First of all, if you are going to stay in this for at least 5 to 10 years, I would definitely apply for a new 30-year mortgage for as much as the lender will allow, and at least see if you can get one and under what terms the mortgage would be awarded to you. And then park the cash aside from it. Keep it as safe as you can. Don't try to invest it and try to grow it, because then there's a chance you can lose it. Keep it in CDs and understand that you're going to get the liquidity of that now and be able to use it when you need it. But if you said, nah, it's only going to be 2 or 3 years that I'm going to stay in this place, you might want to look at putting it up for sale now, seeing what kind of offers you can get for it. I would probably aim a little high. I wouldn't give the place away, and see what you can get from it from that standpoint, and if it's possible to move into a place that's less expensive. Do you find yourself kind of strapped for cash between your income and the other living expenses?
No. I did move my 85, 90-year-old parents in with me to care for them until I don't have to care for them,
Okay.
Any longer,
Well, yeah, I'd go to the bank and just or the credit union and see what they say. And I'm interested in getting a new. I have this paid for home. I have a job. I have income. Here's my credit score. What do you think? And just see what they say, and then decide based on that rather than going out and getting a reverse mortgage first and foremost. Again, the bad news about it is you are going to have a payment, but if you're working, the payment shouldn't be too much for you to bear, and it does give you access to the cash. Otherwise, I just have you say, I'm not. If I'm going to stay in the place for the time being, and I don't want to get a new mortgage, then I'm going to wait. 7 years will come pretty quickly, and once you're 62, then you can start looking at a reverse mortgage, and definitely keep that home equity line of credit open for as much as the lender will allow, because that's your best source of getting cash in an emergency, whether it's a life issue or just home expenses and improvements.
Our best to you, Eileen. Thank you so much for calling. If you have a question for Kevin, our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And our next caller is Steve in Wausau. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Kevin, in the low interest environment that you were talking about, I've got a car loan. And I was thinking, I've got an annuity that came due and can't get any money shopping around on that. I could pay off the car loan, which the loan is 4.75%. Would I be making 4.75%? I don't think there'll be a tax consequences because the loan isn't that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, technically you will. You'll be saving yourself that interest cost, but you will be drying up the liquidity of the money that you've used. And if you pay off a car loan and then have to go back and try to either sell it or borrow against it, you're either not going to get a very good price for it by selling it in a hurry, or you are probably not going to get the same kind of interest rate in the future. You might, but that's a pretty competitive interest rate. Do you have enough savings set aside, Steve, where you've got at least 6 to 12 months of living expenses?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The rainy day fund. I'm fine there. I'm retired, and all my costs are covered.
Okay, then I don't have any problem with that. How many more years do you have on the loan?
Probably 3.
Okay. For some people, I'd say that they should actually keep the loan and keep the savings. But in your case, you're not going to get any kind of investment that's going to pay a 4.7% guaranteed rate over 3 years, like this loan is going to be a 4.7% guaranteed cost. So if that's the only other option out there, yes, I'd go ahead and pay that off.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, Steve, for the call. A listener from Washburn called in to ask about mileage deductions. He says he took a job that has him commuting 130 miles round trip each day. And he wonders, how do mileage deductions work and how can he take advantage of them and where might he be able to find out more information, Kevin?
Well, he can find out more information. I think it's topic 510 at irs.gov. Talks about business use of car and if you use your car in your job or your business. And it's very tricky, and it can change both in terms of the rules over and the amounts that you can use to deduct, and then also your situation can change in terms of how much you're driving and the type of use for the car. It's probably something that there may be some value to it, but not a whole lot of value for the deduction. But we'll put a link up to topic 510. From IRS.gov up at onyourmoney.com later on today for him.
Boy, that's a hefty commute, 130 miles round trip. Our next caller is Christy in Appleton. Hello, Christy.
Hello. I'm so thrilled to be participating in the show.
Thank you
for
calling.
So are we.
Yes.
I am calling. About 2 years ago, my husband and I refinanced our home and locked in from a 7-year ARM to 4.75% on a 30-year mortgage, which I did because of listening to your show, contrary to my husband's inclination, to a shorter duration. And now with rates so low, we are feeling like we ought to refinance again. I was offered 3.5% from a lender on a 30-year fixed, or 4% with a $4,000 lender credit. And he explained to me that they would just give us that money, and that would take away any risk of, if we happen to move in a year, not making up the closing costs. And this was something I'd not heard before, and I asked him, well, what's in it for you? He said, we get to keep your loan, but can you explain more to me about what a lender credit is and what sort of math I'd want to look at to decide what would make the most sense for us?
Well, first of all, Christy, I'm very glad to hear that On Your Money can be a source of your marital discord, and that not only that, but you're poking a stick at the issue again. You must have enjoyed the discussion with your husband so much previously that you're willing to revisit this. So I'm glad to be a part of it at all. I like sitting there. I'm rubbing my hands right now just enjoying this delicious discussion. Well, do you plan on moving in the next year? Is there a possibility that could happen?
There is a possibility. We certainly don't plan to.
Okay.
But there's a possibility.
Well, I'd refinance. And I would actually take the lower interest rate. It's a bet, but since it's just a possibility and not a probability, as you say, I think you're better off getting the lower interest rate and locking that in for 39 years rather than taking a slightly higher interest rate and getting the money back. If something comes up where it looks like, you know, you're really actually going to move and you still have the possibility of doing it, then you might want to take the extra credit for it. But no, I think you can look on it as a straight arrangement. If the terms of the arrangement are either 3.5% or whatever and 4% with $4,000, I'd rather have you lock in with the lower interest rate and take your chances for it, especially because you know, when people move, a lot of times we always assume it's going to be a forever event, but sometimes it's not. It might be a short-term move. You might change your mind, or you can't sell your house. A lot of things can change and happen. And the safety of having that very low payment on the house gives you a lot more flexibility as to what you might do in the future. So I'd rather have you get the lower rate now, take your chances, than I mean, don't get me wrong, 4% is a phenomenal rate. Many people would have given their eye teeth for a 4% mortgage rate up until about 6 months ago. But that's I'd still, if there's a, if the better than 50-50 chance you're going to stay, I'd rather have you get the lower rate and forego the cash.
Fabulous. Thank you for your advice. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Christy, and good luck discussing this one. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and if you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Michael in Southwest Wisconsin is with us now. Hello, Michael.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Very good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask Kevin, I live in an area that has a very dusty road, and it's getting not any better. It's getting worse. And I'd like to try to relocate, and I own my place. And I found a couple places that I was kind of interested in, and wondering, I've talked to someone about a bridge loan to carry me over while I'm trying to fix up another place and move there. But my concern is, well, about my property, if I don't know if, how it would work as far as moving my stuff and having the place, make sure the property that I have now sells. But I'd like to know more about what this bridge loan is about.
Good question, Michael. Is the person offering you this, is it an actual lender at a bank or credit union, or is it just a guy, you know, you met at the bar?
It's at a bank.
Okay, good. Do you know what the terms are specifically, like what the cost might be?
Not yet. Okay. I wanted to investigate first and find out what I might be sticking my neck out into.
Okay, I don't think it's that too bad as long as you understand the cost of it. I mean, you kind of have to do it, especially if you aren't able to. So you think it? Forgive me, Michael. Is your house paid for, your current one, or
yes.
Do you have a mortgage? Okay.
Yes. No, it's paid for.
Okay. What would the, rather than a bridge loan, what would you think about getting a mortgage on your current place now? And using the proceeds from that to do whatever you need to do to the new place. And then once you sell the old place, using the proceeds to pay off the old mortgage. Have you broached that subject with this person?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I'd look at that. The danger with the bridge loan, of course, is that the loan will come due and you won't have the proceeds to pay for it. And you'll have to sell either one of your, you know, your new place or your old place in a hurry, which, of course, means you're not going to get that good of a price for it. Do you have other savings above and beyond? Like, if the bridge loan is, let's say, what's the amount you might look at?
Oh, probably around $40,000.
$40,000? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would do whatever you could do to kick the can down the road on paying off that loan, meaning if they say, Michael, you can either take out this bridge loan for 6 months or a year or 5 years, I'd want the 5 year with the notion that you can always pay it off if you can afford to do that. But there's no immediate time coming due where you have to pay this off and come up with the cash in a hurry. My biggest worry about doing this is that you have to come up with the cash in a hurry and you're unable to do so, and then therefore you have to liquidate something in a short term. Do you have proceeds where you, like your own savings, where you could pay this loan off if you wanted to?
Yes. I was going to ask you about that, Kevin. I have money invested in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And when it's there, and I could actually just stop and cash in all my money in the stock market if I had to, I suppose.
Yeah, okay. This is partially my feelings on the stock market. And by the way, most people who listen to the show, Joe, I've noticed that when they say, I have my money in the stock market, there's always a chuckle or an audible eye roll afterwards.
Yeah. Michael
or
said,
the word invested is in quotation marks or something.
When it's there and a laugh.
Okay, here's what I would do. I would take the bridge loan. I would take the money. Now, again, this is just, this is not advice in specific to anyone's specific situation, but if it were were me and I were in the shoes from what you described, Michael, I would take my money out of the stock market. I would get the bridge loan and then keep the money that you once had in the stock market as safe as possible, knowing that if you get in a pinch, you can always use it to either make the payment or, if you get in a really bad pinch, pay off the bridge loan. But I wouldn't want you to be going through all this turmoil and then also have the value that you have in the stock market flying around, which can only add more stress and uncertainty to the situation.
Okay.
All right, Michael, good luck to you. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and it's time now for Smart Assets. And we have been presenting a series on the cost of college. Last time we discussed what parents of younger and older children should do to make sure there was enough money for college. What's up today, Kevin?
We're going to talk about the aftermath of the college graduation storm. We have about 3.4 million Americans getting college degrees from the 2011 to 2012 academic calendar year. But the unemployment rate for people 18 to 24 is about 50% right now. It's 46% in the last 3 years. Now, a lot of those, the reason they're unemployed is because they're going to school. But even those who do have a job are probably not working in their ideal job. And even the very small portion of college graduates who have the job they want with their degree, it's a very tenuous arrangement. They know that this is not a 40-year proposition, that they're not going to have this job every single year, and that there's a chance that they could lose it again. So there are several different things that they should be doing in light of these unfortunate circumstances with their finances.
All right. So what's the first thing they should be doing?
Well, the hardest things to do is live like you are still a poor college student. You know, many of us have moved out of a dorm room or a cruddy apartment, lucky enough to get a degree, and then sometimes there's a temptation to get a new car, your own apartment, start spending some money in clothes or taking a trip or outfitting the apartment. And I disagree with that. What you should try to do is make the shift into adulthood and adult spending, if you will, very, very gradual. Try to live, you know, in the cheapest places you possibly can. Keep roommates, drive an old car or forego a car all completely, and save as much money as you possibly can. And if you can avoid it, don't take on any new consumer debt, such as charging up stuff on a credit card or taking out a car loan that you may not be able to afford down the road.
Well, should they start paying off their student loans as soon as possible with any extra money they might have?
Definitely not. As part of the transition, this involves keeping as much cash on hand as you possibly can. The only way I would say someone should channel extra money towards student loan repayment is if they know themselves well enough to know that they're going to blow through this if they don't pay off their loans. They're just going to spend it on things they'll regret later. So then I'm okay with them using the money to pay off the student loans. But otherwise, liquidity is much more important than reducing interest costs. And many federal loans qualify for an income-based repayment plan, meaning if either now or down the road you have these types of loans and your income isn't high enough to make the minimum payment, you can actually get the minimum payment reduced and in some cases get the loans forgiven completely as long as you have a record of steady payment on top of it. And if you want more information on that, you can go to IBRinfo.org. It's IBRinfo.org. And again, we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
All right. So when should college grads start paying down the student loans?
I'd like to see it after they've accumulated maybe 12 months worth of living expenses. And there are several methods to this madness. One is it requires kids coming out of college to actually track their living expenses, which you know, I've been an advisor now for almost 25 years. And one of the things that I can definitely say is a common hallmark of people who are financially independent is not that they make a lot of money or that they inherited a bunch of money or whatever. It's that they know what they spend every single month. So write it down and see what you can reduce. And then once you get 12 times those typical monthly expenses, hopefully in a savings account, then maybe you can look for paying down your loans a little faster than it otherwise might be required. You get a better bang for the buck, though, if you ramp up your savings into an at-work retirement plan. If you do have a job and the job offers a 401k or a 403b or a TSA, you get a tax break now on making the contribution that typically pays off about 20 to 30 cents for every dollar you get into that type of plan, and you likely have more money for retirement. There's an old rule of thumb when it comes to saving money for retirement when you're young versus when you're old, like you and me and most of the other people listening. If you have two choices, if you save money from 22 to 32 or 32 to 62, with all other things being equal, the rate of return, the amount of money that you save in for retirement every single year, you'll have the same amount of money if you save from 22 to 32 and stop than if you save from 32 to 62 and stop. By the time you get to 62, you'll actually have probably a little more money, all other variables equal, if you save from 22 to 32 and stop versus starting at 32 and saving all the way to 62, even though you're saving three times as much money.
Well, we have a caller who is a non-traditional recent college grad. Jeannie in Lake Mills is with us. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi.
And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. I wore my Whitewater shirt when I went to vote this morning. But, I'm going to be 54 this summer, and I have now accumulated right around $20,000 in college loans. Because I'm married, even though my husband took no part in paying any part of my education, I only qualified, and I was working up until 2008. So the way all that worked out is I ended up with unsubsidized loans. So I'm paying, you know, over 6% interest rather than the 3 point whatever of the subsidized loan. So I've been trying to pay some of the interest all along. I've got all my other debts pretty much gone except for monthly things just at home. But does the same hold true for someone in my type of situation where, you know, if I waited the traditional amount of time to pay off those loans, I could be getting paid off right around retirement time.
Well, I think you're right, and I don't think that's anything you need to feel bad about. Mm-hmm. Especially what I'd really have you do, Jeannie, is actually save for retirement with any money, extra money you have, because then that money stays in your name. And are you gainfully employed now?
No, not, well, I've just had a couple part-time jobs right now, and I'm looking at a possible going into business with someone.
Uh-huh. So you like not having any money. I got that. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little nervous about that. But yeah,
that's okay.
I'm searching. I'm looking at all options.
Okay, good. That sounds like it. And you're educated, so I think you'll make the right choice here. Especially in light of that, I would much rather have you keep your powder dry. Do not spend money that you don't have to, and do not pay down debts that you don't have to. Just, again, take a lesson from our local domestic and global leaders, and keep kicking the can down the road. Just don't make any big mistakes that'll come back to bite you. And I'd rather have you accumulate money for retirement that can then be used to either make the loan payments to keep you current on the loan so you don't run into trouble down the road, or if you build up $100,000 or whatever in your retirement account over the next several years and say, the heck with this, I'm not going to deal with these loans anymore, then you can start channeling money off to pay that off and, again, get, you know, a greater than 6% rate of return on it. But otherwise, you just want to keep enough aside. And the loans are a pain in the butt, but it is you made a very wise investment if you can use the education to further your income. And you really can pay those loans off, Jeannie, with payments of about maybe $250 a month, and they'll be paid off in 10 years. Again, that's sadly my cable bill. So I think that it's an affordable amount, and I'd much rather see you go slow. Yeah, you're going to get dinged a little bit on interest, but as you retire the principal, the interest cost will drop as well.
Good luck, Jeannie. Thanks very much for the call. Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, is going to answer more of your questions in just a moment, and we will get some computer cleanup tips in our spring cleaning series. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Greenback paper bill. Yes, just a little piece of paper coated with chlorophyll.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine along with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and it's time for our spring cleaning segment. For several weeks, we have been providing some traditional and not so traditional tips on cleaning up a particular part of your life. And today you're going to help me tackle my computer, Kevin?
I felt like tackling my computer in the past, and punching it into the ground and throwing it out the window. But we'll talk today about just cleaning it up, making it more efficient so that you can hopefully keep the old one you have, and also making it safer to use and help you maybe avoid buying a new one for the time being. And then also any damage that happens if you lose access to your current computer or lose your laptop outright.
Yeah, so where do we start?
Let's start with actually, honest-to-goodness, cleaning. If you've ever had someone, you know, you're near your laptop, your PC or whatever, all day, every day, especially if you eat while you're using it, you never notice how gross it's gotten until someone says, hey, can I use your laptop for a quick second? And you look over it and it just seems to be covered in, you know...
grossness.
Yeah. Grossness, that's a good word for that, yeah. So clean up the keyboard, the mouse, and the screen, get a little gunky, so I would start with that. Go through the programs you have on there and remove anything you don't want on there by going to computer and then uninstall if you have a Windows machine. Delete any large files that are taking up room on the hard drive, or we've got an option for that if you stay tuned. And then the same thing with the emails. Go through Outlook if you have it, or Gmail or whatever, and if it is actually on your hard drive, you may want to sort through those by size, and if there's some pictures from the family reunion from 12 years ago that you either have stored someplace else or more likely never looked at and don't care if you ever see again, you can delete those. That'll help clean up your hard drive as well. And then finally, when you do have the programs that you do want to use, go ahead, click on those little buttons in the taskbar in the lower right-hand corner. You've been ignoring those warnings and alerts for years. It's time to go and actually download the honest-to-goodness updates.
I have been ignoring them for years. And then what do?
Start worrying about speeding it up. A lot of people are able to download music or movies or television shows. You may want to look at a new internet connection. The prices are very low, and since our media habits are moving from traditional televisions over to the PC, it might be a worthy investment to get a faster internet connection. Check and see. A lot of the cable providers have pricing packages right now, which can make it very affordable, and you can get much higher speeds for lower prices. You also may want to look at cleaning up the disk and defragmenting the hard drive, which we'll have a couple links on how to do that for both Windows and a Mac machines up at onyourmoney.com.
And then I'm done?
You are not done. After you have cleaned up and sped up, it's time to back up. You have a lot of valuable things on there. Some things are priceless. The photos you actually do want, files that you couldn't live without, other media like movies or music. And then you also have some programs on there that I'm sure you've lost the replacement disk or the restore disk. So you have a couple different options. One is to get an external hard drive, which typically costs about $100 to $200 or so. And that's just a little black box, if you will, that you can use to back up anything you want or all of your computer in some cases if you don't have a ton of stuff on there. And then you can take that wherever you go or have it with you if you need to restore your PC or you get a new one. You can also use the cloud where you'd have off-site storage. These would be ones like Mozy, and there's a couple other ones like Carbonite is one that's a very good one. And this is where you, via an internet connection, for about $5 a month typically, you can have a backup that you can then access anywhere you want to and many times by any device. So if you have a Mac at home and you have some information on there, some of these programs will let you then access that information anywhere, even from your iPhone or your other smartphone for it. Now, the disadvantage is with a hard drive, you actually have to have the hard drive to get access to it. You have to store it someplace that's safe. With the online one, you're actually, you know, technically putting your data into somebody else's system that's hopefully trusted, but you never know. So probably some combination of it is a good belt and suspenders way to go, where you would have both a hard drive backup that you could access wherever you want, but then also an online one. So if you need to get at something on your computer from a remote location, you can do so that way.
Thank you, Kevin. That is helpful. Let's see if we can help out another listener or two waiting online. Jenny in Menominee is with us now. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning. I just have a question about kind of the order of operations of paying down debt and where generating some savings comes within that. Because, you know, I always read books and I hear programs and set 3 months or 6 months aside of living expenses. I just can't even conceive of how that happens in knowing that there's debt out there with some of it with a high interest rate. And just how do you even begin?
Jenny, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Were you raised on a farm?
No.
Were you raised by people who were raised on a farm?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. It only took 2 degrees of separation before we have found a modern woman with a modern question and dirt. And typically the closer you are to dirt, the more debt averse that you are, because you've been taught that all the banker wants to do is take your farm away from you or your relatives or your ancestors the minute the drought comes. So you should not be afraid of debt. Debt is like a chainsaw in that if you're trying to cut a tree down, a chainsaw can be a very effective tool. It can also be extremely dangerous in the wrong hands. Debt can be a very effective tool, but it can also be extremely dangerous in the wrong hands. So if you're looking to retire debt, I would actually, I'd go back to the segment a few minutes ago. I'd rather have people have 12 months of living expenses aside, because actually the time length of unemployment right now between jobs is approaching 10 to 12 months. And that can be savings in a savings account. It can be Roth IRAs. It can even be college savings accounts. It can even be a home equity line of credit, but I'd prefer it to be actual cash. Then when you're looking at which debt to retire first, you want to start with the higher interest rate and work down from there. So if you have a credit card with 15%, pay that off first before you address any of the other ones and move through it slowly until you finally get to the mortgage. And even then, I don't see any reason for someone to pay a mortgage off right now unless they have millions of dollars set aside and they don't think they'll have any need to borrow against that home in the future.
Good luck, Jenny. Thanks for the call. Bill in Racine is with us now. Hello, Bill.
Hi. Say I'm going to be 70 and a half this year, and my understanding is, you know, you have to take this mandatory withdrawal from the IRA. But also, I had a friend, you know, what friends do, they give you advice, and they say, you know, you can wait till next year. Is that possible, and what would be the advantage?
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with complicated tax code, I think just asking around over lunch or bowling or whatever and then taking your friend's advice is probably the best way to go. Actually, this friend in this case, Bill, is correct. You do not have to make a required minimum distribution from an IRA until April 1st of the year after you turn 70 and a half. So you turn 70 and a half in 2012, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Technically, you don't have to take the first RMD, if you will, until April 1st of next year. The problem for some people, though, is you then have to take another RMD by the end of next year as well, a second one, to fulfill the requirement. So you could end up taking two withdrawals in 1 year, which is not a big deal unless they're larger withdrawals or they'll put you at a higher tax bracket than you would be if you took it out this year. So are you taking money out of this IRA anyway, or would this be the first time you pull money out?
First time.
Okay. Will there be a difference in what your tax rate would be if you were to take it out this year versus next year?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then you I mean, you can wait. I will say this. I wouldn't wait if you think you'll forget about it, because if you do forget to take it out by the due date, there can be a 50% excise tax on the amount that you were supposed to take out. Plus, you still have to take it out. So if you were supposed to take $5,000 out and you don't, they'll hit you with $2,500 in a penalty. Then they will also say, now take the $5,000 out, and then hit you with taxes again on top of that. So if you are going to take it out, definitely make sure. But otherwise, unless it's some amazing investment or you think your tax bracket's going to be higher this year than next year, you might as well just take it out this year.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for the call. Just time now for the website of the week, Kevin.
It's dns-ok.us. There is an FBI investigation that discovered about 600,000 computers worldwide have been taken over by malicious software, which has redirected their internet browsing to hacker web servers. If you go to this website, the FBI has set this up. If you can check your computer by clicking on a link. If your computer is infected and you don't and you don't check on this link, your computer could be shut down after the 1st of July. So dns-ok.us, and we'll have a link up to that website on yourmoney.com later on today.
Good. And four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC. He will be back next week with more advice and information on your money. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Naya Mukherjee for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you tune in tonight starting at 8 for our Wisconsin Recall Election Night Special. And tomorrow morning, we will be talking about the results all morning long here on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.